There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Away we go, FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here on this Friday, and a lot to talk about this hour and next. Of course, you're a part of it. Reminder, if you're new to the show, hey, welcome. Glad to have you. The phone line and the text line, for simplicity's sake, it's 343-0106. Gets you through both a good old-fashioned phone call and a text. And reminder, too, if you're running that FM Talk 106.5 app, it has that talkback feature, amongst many other things, on the multi-tool that is the FM Talk 106.5 app. If you look on the front page, landing page, whatever the... You get that page. At the bottom there, you'll see a microphone icon. If you'll press that, it lets you record a message, emails it to the show, and I can play it back here on the show as well. All right, as we get started, and I'm going to bring on my guest this hour, my friend Jonathan McConnell. But first, I got to say, he's coming in to talk about the second biggest story, I think, that concerns me out there. The number one story is, if you heard it in the national news running earlier, looks like Sesame Street writers, as of today, are going to strike. Now, they didn't learn enough from the SAG strike yet. The Sesame Street writers are authorizing a strike because they have some contract issues out here. This is the thing that's most worrisome, Jonathan. And I thought about this. So what do you do? You know, the writers, strike that happened out in Hollywood, they were worried about AI coming in the world. So I wonder in this, if they let AI start writing the scripts for Sesame Street,
I think it would be solved. We'd have entertainment forever. But if not, let's just eat Big Bird.
So what, I mean,
don't tell my six-year-old I said that.
We're not. We're going to keep that on the down low. But what would you think? So if you've seen some of these AI stories here, they at one point asked AI to show them pictures of Nazis. Yeah. And they had multicultural Nazis. They had black
they
Nazis.
Well-dressed, though.
Yes, black Nazis, American Indian Nazis. Asian Nazis had all these. If you go, you can Google the stories, you'll see it. They asked AI to show them Nazis, and they made them multicultural. So AI takes its liberty out there. So what if AI gets into writing the scripts for Sesame Street and decides, as it pulls the information from around the web, what the script would be like, what the characters would Oscar the Grouch would where would they be, how he would identify Big Bird, of course, the Count. I don't think they're going to like the Count. The Count is a legacy of the feudal system of Europe, right? I mean, he's a Count because he can count, but he also has
a title.
He's the Count. So what AI would do, so if y'all want to do that as a sidebar on the text line today at 343-0106, which I think is the biggest story in realpolitik, really, if Sesame Street writers go on strike, the ownership there, PBS, I guess, whatever, brings in AI to rewrite Sesame Street, what does it look like? I'll be looking for your text at 343-0106. And without further ado, now to talk about maybe some secondary and tertiary items, my friend Jonathan McConnell from Meridian US. Hey, man.
Hey, glad to be here. And also, today is 29 years since Oklahoma City bombing.
Wow.
Yeah. Isn't that a crazy?
The Murrow Building.
Yep.
I remember being on the radio. Weird thing. So I have a sister who lives in New York. She was a student at Oklahoma City University when the Murrow Building bombing happened.
No,
so she was there. Not near the building, but she was there. And I remember getting her on the air this back when I was on the air in Birmingham, Tuscaloosa. And then she moves. She's a Broadway choreographer by trade. Moves to Manhattan on 9/11. And I said, after I checked that she was okay that day, I said, please do not move anywhere I live.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's
please
right.
do not move anywhere I live. But yeah, 29 years since the fertilizer bomb in the back of a U-Haul, right?
That's right. Yeah, Timothy McVeigh.
The, 29 years.
I know. I couldn't believe it.
So that tells me when I think about how long have I been doing this radio thing, and 29 years ago, I was sitting
You're not gray in a bit. You look great.
Thank you, man. I appreciate that.
He's got a face for radio.
Yeah, so. keep it up. Keep it up. I want to talk about this, too, right now before we get into what happened yesterday and what's been happening in the Middle East. How are your crews doing? Because and I guess we'll back up for people who don't know what your business is, what you do.
So we do anti-piracy work mostly off the coast of Somalia. We've got – we put armed security teams on board ships as they transit the high-risk area. Our teams are okay. It's been – the last 8 days have been – or 7 days have been a little intense, especially with the original, 350 drones and missiles shot at Israel. It was very that was a long weekend. Spent most of it at the office just watching to make sure everything was okay. We have multiple teams in the area. And our guys are safe. All of our ships are safe. So we are very happy. Well, we're cautiously optimistic. So we'll see.
But your crews, because you got two things going on there. And I'm, you know, thinking about this, I've been studying a lot. I just picked up my mother at the airport at 11 o'clock last night. She'd been in Egypt for 18 days. Oh, just got back from Egypt. So believe me, I was tuned in as well. That you've got two things. You've got this piracy, which, you know, has been this longstanding discussion about the Horn of Africa and the piracy there, which you said, into the vacuum of what had happened, the piracy kind of came back strong here over the last, what?
Four months. Yeah. Or actually, I guess since November, yeah. So it's come back quite strong ever since November 17th. When the Houthis attacked, or
October,
October 7th was the Israel attack.
And yeah, the Houthis started what, a month
about
later,
40 days later. So okay. November 17th, they took the Galaxy Leader and they hijacked that vessel using a helicopter. And so it was obviously Iranian forces.
We got the video, which is crazy. We got the video of this happening.
Notice that they put the videographer on the ground before they put the everybody else. It was entirely staged, which is. A very Persian or Arab thing to do of like, oh, well, we're going to make a good presentation. We're going to make sure this looks right.
You do it right. We need multiple angles here.
How do my eyebrows look? Yeah. Am I still a unibrow? Come on. So, yeah. So, I mean, like, it was quite mesmerizing. Their tactics were absolutely atrocious, which was really funny. My guys were like, oh, that we would, like, we pray that something like this happens on one of our ships. So
you're saying, like, even the person that brought up the end of the line when you were Marine could have... Yeah, done much better.
Okay. No, I mean, they were flagging each other constantly in the video, but you know, the video made them feel good, so that's all that matters. So,
but that kicks off this thing where, you know, you've been in a couple times with me. We're talking about the shipping going through the region and the threat from the Houthis. So you got that threat from the Houthis. At the same time, the pirates are saying, I guess, hey, people are distracted. Let's ramp this back up.
That's right. And they have. So they've actually, like, the Houthis are doing their thing, but the Somalians have actually picked back up. They anchored a vessel, the Abdullah, off of Somalia several months ago. It was back in November, December. And they actually just released it for an undisclosed amount of money that was disclosed to be about $5 million. So they've got some money, some change in the pockets, buy some more boats, and get back out there.
Capital investment.
That's right.
So they're not profit taking. You think it's mostly capital investment?
I think they've bought enough land in Kenya from 2011, 2014 at piracy. So
they're all right doing that. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about, you talk about what's happened over the last week. So let's talk about from Saturday to last night. If y'all, you know, hadn't followed this, of course, Israel strikes back in Iran. Three explosions near an air base in central Iran. About
Asfaha, yeah. So where the nuclear facility
is
there.
About, yeah, okay. Let's talk. It's about 200 miles south of Tehran is what they said. Mm-hmm. And that it was strike from missiles from airplanes and maybe drones as well.
Drones, yeah. So, but Iranian news says it was just three unidentified objects. So they're not even giving Israel the credit for, like, even doing a counterstrike. So they're downplying it.
Which I think is actually good.
That's good. Yeah, that means it's going to de-escalate most likely. So the fact that they're not even acknowledging it, even the defense minister from Israel in Netanyahu's cabinet said lame. Like, literally, he tweeted lame right after the response, which I think is funny. Like, when we were texting last night, I was like, this is a big deal. Like, this is about to get big. Because we're playing it up in the media like, oh, man, they just nuked Isfahan. You know, like, they've bombed the heck out of these
places. Which is Isfahan. This is where it seems like it was kind of like I punch at you and I hit you just right on the corner of your chin, telling you I could have centered up, but I didn't. Because Isfahan, that's where that's the center of their nuclear program, right?
That's right, yeah.
But they didn't. The way I understand it, and of course this is half a world away, you have a better sense of this, they didn't hit the actual nuclear site. I think they kind of said, we could have.
Yep.
Maybe. Right? Do you think, am I reading too much into that, Jonathan?
Maybe. I think it was a weak response. Maybe it was a calculated response of like, hey, we're not going to let you shoot 350 drones at us or drones and missiles at us without us doing something. But, you know, they say that the attack last weekend from Iran to Israel cost Israel around $5 billion mm-hmm. worth of anti-drone missiles. I mean, mm-hmm. now watching the videos from it was absolutely spectacular. It was really neat.
It was. But, I go back to this. You and I talked about last time. I was talking about earlier in the week on the show. This idea of mismatching of That's armaments. Right. We talked about it, you know, using a $1 million U.S. missile to shoot down a $17,000 drone, you know, in the Straits.
Same thing.
Eventually, you run your treasury dry doing that. And in this case, what the Iranians had in it, I don't know how much leather they had to slap, how much money they had to throw down to do what they did, but I guarantee you, Israel, the United States, Jordan, all associated partners spent a lot more money That's to right. defend than they did to attack, Iran did to attack.
That's right. And if you look at, I think it was amazing to watch, like, hey, the drones are in the air. And it's like, okay, well, we got to wait 3 hours for them to hit because they're going like 150 miles an hour. Mm-hmm. They're just normal prop planes, Samas 7 drones cost like $2,000. And you're like, and we just shot out of the sky with a $2 million missile or the Iron Dome or right. whatever we did. And you're like, this was stupid. But, you know, like.
But it was quite a show. Yeah. So
it was great. Most expensive fireworks show we've had to date.
Yes.
If they could have done it on July 4th, it would have been a lot cooler.
Yes.
Jerks. You do an appropriate response. And I don't think that we've still seen an appropriate response from Israel in regards to Hamas. Like a lot of really good Jewish friends, and they were just like, Jonathan, if this would have happened in the United States, if you calculate the population of Israel versus the population of the United States, this was 30 times as bad as 9/11.
Sure.
And like, and by the way, Hamas still has... captives.
Sure, and, they have hostages. Yeah.
Hostages, and we haven't, like, we're not, like, and like, and we are trying to negotiate peace? Absolutely not.
Well, okay, here's my worry, though, that you didn't have one place to strike back at, right? You have Gaza, and Hamas is in charge, but at the same time, there are a lot of people, whether they are supporters of Hamas really, or they're going along to get along, which you could imagine if you're there and Hamas is running the show, you just, you know,
yeah, right.
shut up and do your stuff. But they're taking it on the chin. You know, those people are taking it on the chin. I mean, 30,000, I think, dead in Gaza.
In Gaza.
That's not all Hamas.
No,
that's
it's not. Unfortunately, members. It's not. The problem is that when you look at that population, I mean, statistics are always wrong, but they said something like 85% of Gaza believe that Israel should be pushed into the sea.
Mm-hmm.
Like when you believe that no one has a right to exist, so people do not have a right to exist, then you just have a fundamental problem with that entire group of people.
Of course. And I want to get to this when we come back too, though. Going forward for Israel, if that was 85%, that number is 99% now.
That's right, yeah.
With those people and how are you getting
that was New York City in the... we were watching on Fox News.
Right, watch it yesterday. Coming right back, more of our conversation with Jonathan McConnell, Meridian U.S., a man who has folks right now, garden ships in the general, broader, broad stroke region.
The not fun areas.
Yeah, there we go. That's right. Coming right back, more Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 12:22, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile on this Friday. Yeah, a combination of a text we'll get to, too. Of course, we have texts and questions for Jonathan McConnell, my guest from Meridian U.S. Also, some people suggesting some things about my idea I gave Jeff, early release, maybe for organ donations. I will say that the fact that bodies are coming out of the prison system without organs and there's no, like, no word to the family why... worthwhile investigation.
I mean, it's already happening. It's just what they're, yeah. So,
yeah. So, I mean, but so if it's happening, they ought to get something for it.
Well, you know, in Saudi Arabia, you can donate your arm and if you steal something.
Yeah, that's
you know,
right.
It's just a donation. That's all it is. I mean, that's whatever.
And you can get, you know, people don't realize they say they're real tight on laws. You can get stoned there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, do you remember the caning in Singapore?
Yeah.
Like
so,
the 90s? That was amazing.
And can you imagine, like, so at that point, American citizen, I forget the guy's name. I don't know if he, I think he spray painted something or vandalized.
Yeah.
You have some familiarity with those regions of the world.
Yeah.
Singapore's a crazy thing that, you know, you listen to the leader there who says, we couldn't be a democracy. We have to be this kind of dictatorship because we have too many cultures mixed here. And if I let people make decisions by group, this thing would be chaotic. So I have to lay down the law. And that's why Singapore is the home of so much business and all that kind of stuff.
But it works so
it
well.
Does
I mean,
work
Singapore
for them.
Is an incredible country.
Right.
And it's, I had there next week actually on Friday. And
I didn't know if I could say anything. So, yeah.
So it's amazing. It's a place where,
but you can't get any gum.
You can't get gum, and you can't get guns. Are very hard to come by, or hard to get in there. It's we've had some ships go in there. So
no guns, no gum either.
Yeah, no gum. Yeah, because gum is quite a big penalty. If I'm not mistaken,
I think you get caned on it.
Yeah,
too. So don't go chewing that.
I'll spray paint your name on a water tower for you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Appreciate that,
Sean. Forever.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate that. And we'll get back to the thank you for those who've decided what it might look like if Sesame Street was scripts were written by AI. I appreciate those. We might get those later. Let's see this one for you here. Then we get back into my questions to ask you. Let's see here. Ask Jonathan if they ever use dogs on the ships that they're guarding.
No, we don't.
That's from Tim. Okay.
Yeah. So dogs, that was actually an opportunity that we looked at, especially in West Africa, because West Africa is a little bit harder to work with weapons. It's actually a pretty good solution because, I mean, those dogs are absolutely ferocious, but we never got into that business. We actually never did anything in West Africa for the most part, not on the water. And that area is so corrupt, and it is very well established on the maritime security side. And I know a lot of the players over there. I always refer out to our clients. Hey, you're going to West Africa. Here's who to use, but we don't play in that space.
Ed's asking you, could a stinger have worked on shooting down the drones?
You know, I don't know if a stinger. I'm just a dumb infantry guy from my time in the Marine Corps, so I don't actually know the capabilities and limitations of a stinger and whether it has the ability of targeting and zoning in on a drone. Our technology is growing, you know, every single day. I mean, what, a Stinger was from the 80s is when that technology came out, so I doubt it does unless it's got a modified sensor device on the front. But, I mean, even now they've got drones that can, drones with the technology that can, you press the button on the drone, it goes up, and you can have it target individually and execute on those targets for anything. Like, okay, anybody that has a weapon, and it can shoot it. And I mean, I literally have seen this technology and I'm just like, that is so scary. Have you ever seen Terminator? Like,
yeah,
this
that's
is a
it.
Very bad idea. And,
yeah.
But that technology is there. It's
then when AI gets done with Sesame Street and takes Sesame Street writing the script, AI will then take over running the drones.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. As long as they don't touch Elmo, we're good.
Yeah, we're good. Thank you. And the font of all information, my friend Supermom says Michael Fay was the American caned in Singapore.
Oh, yeah.
So there we go. A little flashback. There's probably younger people listening go, what are they talking about? Go Google.
I think that happens a lot.
Yeah. Go Google it. Y'all will see the story we're talking about. You know, here's, I thought about this with, we're talking about Isafati. No, I'm not. Isafani, the location there where the strikes went into effect, that's where the nuclear sites are, but they didn't hit the nuclear sites. Because I know that Iran had said if Israel would hit their nuclear sites, they would hit Israel's nuclear sites. I mean, it's saber rattling, but it's that's scary sabers.
Yeah. So if they had actually legitimately responded, and if they had hit, if they'd eliminated the nuclear sites, I think that it would have pushed us into the Middle East into a global war. A war. I mean, it was interesting to see last weekend. You know, Jordan defended Israel, which
quite well actually,
quite well, and that's. Interesting.
Here's what Jordan could do, though. Jordan said, I think I read it secondhand. Jordan said, well, we were defending our airspace
because that
incoming was coming over Jordan. So they could have it both ways.
That's right.
They were defending Israel, but they could just say to their people, we were just defending our airspace.
Yeah. Well, and King Abdullah is one of my, the King of Israel is one of the most fascinating. King of Jordan was one of the most fascinating individuals. I mean, you know, during the whole ISIS days, he was running the airstrikes as a pilot.
Yep.
Airstrikes on ISIS. I mean, like just absolute stud.
And I think, he likes to hunt, too. I read some story. That's what he does for
spare
time. Does
he hunt bears with his shirt off like Putin
does? He's not as manly as Putin. I think he hunts a different way.
Yeah, that's all right. We got Joe Biden. He can... I forgot. What were we talking about?
Yeah, I don't know.
That's a very Biden thing to do.
Yeah, it'll let you just shuffle off stage when you do that. So
the Roomba.
Yes, the Roomba move. Okay, so saw this. We've got a minute or two here before we go to break. We can come back. So U.S. Treasury, I'm reading some stories. U.S. Treasury now says we got new sanctions that are going to be targeting pivotal sectors of the Iranian economy that create billions in revenue. I got a question for you. Why weren't we doing that already, Jonathan?
You know, it's my fault. I'll take one for the day. This is all my fault that we were not already sanctioned. Because we have to give them billions of dollars of money that we've seized. Oh, you know, that seems like it makes a lot of sense.
Right. You'd think before we're into this situation we're in now, I got an idea. Because you usually don't get pushback when you're talking about sanctions. That's you right. Get bipartisan support. Yeah, sanction this, sanction that. So now we're going to sanction Iran.
Yeah.
And they said, yeah, they're going to target two companies that are involved in making Iranian UAV programs, the Shahed 121s,
yeah,
which are also the ones being used by...
And Houthis, yeah.
And Houthis are using them, Iran's using them, and Russia's using them in Ukraine.
Yeah.
And now we're going to put some sanctions in on them.
Oh, yeah. It seems like that. Definitely ripe, or maybe a little bit expired, yeah.
Do you think this administration wants a war?
No, I don't. I think this... I think this administration is very anti-war, which is good. I mean, that's why in a lot of ways. But the problem is that walk softly and carry a big stick does not apply at all. We don't have a big stick at all.
We're walking very softly. But our hands are empty.
That's right.
Coming right back. More Jonathan McConnell right here on Midday Mobile.
Is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
12:35, FM Talk 106.5. Midday Mobile on this Friday. Glad to have you along. Good to have my buddy Jonathan McConnell from Meridian US in studio. And a lot of questions coming in from y'all. And also, I got more I got to roll out here beforehand. I was on this complaint line here before we went to the news about the sanctioning. Right now, Treasury's going to sanction Iran and companies that also five more companies that support Iran's Revolutionary Guard.
Yeah.
I mean, could we not have?
It seems like something we should have done a while ago.
This would have been the thing I would have
maybe
done.
Maybe like in like 2000 or like 1998, maybe. I don't know.
Right.
You know.
These are things. But the thing we are not sanctioning is, and there's all these other, I mean, Iran does have other businesses, steel, they're making UAVs, selling them to bad players around the world. But the big one, obviously, is oil.
Well, yeah.
And we aren't sanctioning Iranian oil sales. I mean, I don't want to be so cynical to say it's because it's, number one, would upset China. Number two, we're in election year.
Yeah.
Gas prices are already rising. They don't want to rise anymore. But, and by the way, like we talked about during the break, I saw something that the Biden administration has now lifted the sanctions on Venezuelan oil. So, okay. But I mean, it seems like if you wanted to get them, I would like this to be done without what you're good at, you know, as a Marine.
Yeah.
Like, I would like it to be done. Stuxnet virus and sanctions, you know, because I'm your peacenik friend. So why don't you sanction Iranian oil? I mean, yes, the prices here will go up, but you want to try to get them on their knees. I think that does.
That's right. It absolutely does. But once again, you said it's an election year, right? So in honestly, whenever you sanction oil, they honestly just sell it all to India and to China anyway at a normal price.
So India will buy. I've noticed this. India is like the new, like, I'm everybody's friend, nobody's friend. Like they're taking advantage of every situation.
Well, they also have 1.6 billion mouths to feed. Mm-hmm. I mean, so like, India's a wonderful country, some incredible food. And but I will say this, like India, I think is in the future is going to play a pretty pivotal role in the world. Because you know,
world's biggest democracy.
That's right. Yeah. And you know, it's interesting. Admiral Stravitis wrote a book. He was the PACCOM commander. It's like 2034, 2038, something like that. And he actually. He plays out the scenario that we're living almost where, you know, we get into a tick for tack with China and we trade nuclear attacks off each other. And India, spoiler alert, India ends it for us and basically stops both of us and brokers the peace, but stops it by shooting down one of our planes. But they're like, hey, listen, we're not escalating this anymore. We're ending this war. And
does India become the new superpower then?
No, I think the book just ends of like, all right, guys, let's not be jerks. You know, like
so it's India who comes
India,
in.
Yeah. But the premise is that India and China are far more technologically advanced in the U.S. And this is written by Admiral Stavridis. And you're like, just like, if the PACCOM commander mm-hmm. is saying that these two are going to, you know, eat our lunch, that scares the absolute mess out of me.
Yeah, and by proxy, then scares me that way too. You know, it's on the nuclear thing too. I understand in a weird way, well, not a weird way. I try to put myself in other people in countries' shoes all the time. I understand Iran wanting to get the nuke. The second you can get the nuke, you're undeniable. You don't get Gaddafi'd, right?
Yep.
Yeah, once you have the nuke, you usually don't get taken over.
That's right. That's right.
So I get them pursuing it, but at the same time, I don't know how long, you know, having their physicists to have bad car wrecks and die, Stuxnet virus. I don't know how that
works. Was great, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the number, if y'all want to look at the, you know how they put a list out every year, like the world's most dangerous jobs outside of military and law enforcement? I would say being an Iranian physicist might be one of the...
Right. That's right. Like, oh man, all of a sudden he just was drinking this soup and he started bleeding. I don't know, he died.
Great. I don't know how...
It's very creative. Yes. It's almost as bad as like Clinton body count, but yeah.
It is. It's a little wink from the Mossad on that one.
That's right.
So they're going to get eventually... I don't know if you delay to a certain point that changes relationships or... I mean, the idea that they will never get the nuke...
I think they're going to get I think they probably already have it, let's be totally honest. But now the question is, they probably have it, but they're like, you know, it's kind of like the U.S. government. It was made by the lowest bidder. Do you want to be the one who presses the button? Like, are you sure it's not going to go off right in our face? You know, like, so I think that's kind of where they are. So I think they probably got it. They just haven't tested it. So that way they can't validate it to the world that they've got it. But, I mean, you know, when do you test it? You test it on, you know, a country you don't like. I wonder who Iran does not like.
So, I mean, but the problem is, you know, there are many problems with that. But the second that happens, let alone World War III, for sure, a massive war in the Middle East, in the Levant.
That's right. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. No.
And we are seeing this, they have to walk a line. It's pretty interesting. Like you said with Jordan, you know, say here they are shooting down Iranian missiles coming in. Out of one side of their mouth, they can say down with Israel.
Yeah.
But at the other time, they're doing the same thing. You look at Egypt. You know, and where they stand in this. And of course, you know, the Saudis, my opinions are known about them, but I'm not the biggest fan. But
I'm a huge fan of MBS, but yeah.
Yeah, well, get that DeWalt Sawzall out my truck.
Well, I didn't say it. I mean, the Kasagi thing was a little blip, but.
Yeah. Well, a few things there. So as we look at that region, though, I wonder how many, I think we're actually getting a test of where alliances would go. And the other night was, you know, because they can say a lot of things, and the Abraham Accords were coming and all these things. That's a lot of stuff on paper. When the drones and missiles started flying, we got a little idea of who was going to show up to the fight.
That's right. And Saudi did not at all. No. Neither does UAE. I mean, the Emirates have not either. So it's you know, those are the two powerhouses.
But Jordan did. Think about the money that the Saudis depend on from us, mm-hmm. okay? But Jordan doesn't get near that kind of money from us.
Not at all.
Jordan stepped in when UAE and Saudi didn't.
That's right. Yeah, because they had the deniability of this is going across our airspace. I mean, that's a great point. But the Saudis too. I mean, it's the home of Mecca and Medina. I mean, that they are the tuning fork of Islam, right? In my opinion.
They're the holy sites.
They cannot. I don't think that they can really get involved until the point of like. I mean, I think that they definitely can't take up for Israel.
No.
And they hate Iran. You know, obviously the Arab Persian thing mm-hmm. there. And so, and they're fighting, they've been fighting a proxy war with Iran for, 10 years
in Yemen.
So it's amazing. That area of the world is so convoluted and with the Shia and the Sunni Muslim sects. And it's just, it's fascinating. It's, I don't even understand it. I've worked over there for almost 20 years. So
that scares me when you don't understand it. Oh, by the way, we talked about Singapore earlier. My buddy CB Carl, he was a CB, said when I was in Singapore in the early 80s, they had a sign hanging over the Singapore airbase gate that says drop your drugs or drop dead in 5 different languages.
That's true, though. They're the same policy. I mean, I think it's the same policy there now. I don't.
Yeah, I think it's
never touched a drug in my life, so I don't have to worry about that. Right. But every once in a while, I have to be like, do I have any like ammo in my bag or anything like that?
Right.
Or, my laptop got extra screening one time, and I had gun residue or I had explosive residue.
I had the same thing. I had cordite on a Cordura bag, and it got swabbed and came up, and I said that's because I had ammunition in there before.
Yeah, that's right.
And I'm like, the same thing happened, man.
And I literally I had to pull up my licenses, and I was like, listen, I'm a federal firearms license dealer. I do this. I was like, this is. probably normal. I was like, the laptop works. I was like, so it's clearly not a bomb. Like, right. I was like, but I almost missed my flight. It was they like brought the dogs. I'm like, if that dog sits, we're gonna have a problem. I'm like,
it's gonna be bad.
All right, stand up, buddy.
What about coming back to, you know, we're so focused on what's happening right now with Iran and Israel, taking away some of the discussion of what's happening with the IDF in Gaza. What happens when Israel is successful? How do you occupy Gaza? Who occupies Gaza? Of course, I'm always worried about us, United States, getting pulled into it. I mean, if it was bad before, who are you going to turn it over to? You know, once whatever the military portion of it, like the kind of the world you live in, Marine world, you go do the things, you destroy the things, you kill the people, get the thing done.
That's right.
But it's not over then.
But so, Sean, you're doing something that America's never done. It's like, show me what the end state is. Give me an objective for war. We've never done that.
Yeah.
We've never done that. And so, you know, like, what is, here's the sad thing when you have to say this about Israel, like, what is Israel's end objective? Survive. And that, like, that is the lowest order of like, mm-hmm. Maslow's hierarchy.
Yeah, Maslow's hierarchy.
And we're like, we're sitting there, we're like, nah, just to live without being blown up every day, like, so that my kids can go to school, that my kids can have a life better than me.
Right.
That's like the lowest objective. And we're like, no, I want my kids to prosper. And you're like, no, I just want my kids still breathing at the end of the day. That's sad that that's where we are with Israel, that's what their objective is. Because, that, I mean, Gaza, when you have 99% probably think that they should be mm-hmm. marching in the air into the water and just marched out, you're going to have the majority of the Arab world believes that.
Right. And so if you can't just say mission accomplished and walk out,
on
right?
The aircraft carrier,
yeah,
we can't do that?
Yeah, you can't do mission accomplished and walk back out, right? And no. Say, Gaza will get, you know. No. Well, so
safe haven for terrorism for generations.
Right. So you're going to say, well, you can't do that, so then you have to occupy it. What does that look like? Is that the worst occupation on planet Earth? And then it's not going to be the UN blue helmets do it. It's got to be IDF, and then they're going to bring partners in, and that's what scares me about us.
That's right. The Ugandans are great at third-party militaries. So everybody fears them. They're pretty big.
Yeah.
Yeah,
bring the Ugandans in, let them.
Yeah, that's right.
You know what? The Ugandans probably say, nah, not this.
Yeah, no. We'll stick this one to Gaza. So. I wouldn't either. No, absolutely not.
And you make a great point. Israelis right now are trying to survive.
That's right.
I had the luxury of sitting on my fat butt back here in Mobile, Alabama,
that's right.
and thinking about it as the secondary, tertiary, you know, effects of this going forward. And what do you do? And is this going to be a catalyst, or is it going to be a block for the two-state solution? I mean, we're going to have more talk about that or no talk about that?
You know, but the Arab world does not want to even entertain that discussion of a two-state solution. And I think that's where the Abraham Accords were getting to, hopefully. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think that
It had to go backwards now after
that's
this, right?
I would think it would, which I think means that Hamas wins, Hezbollah wins, because they knew that they were getting close to a two-state solution, which they find unacceptable. And so it's, you know, that's the problem. I think that, you know, when you have an extremist mindset, which I'm not saying that, like, by the way, one of my closest friends and former business partner, Ryan, is Arab. He's Yemeni, and he's a wonderful human being. Maybe not a good Muslim because he drinks with me sometimes, which is makes him a great guy. But he's a wonderful human being. And he is not extreme. He's a normal guy. And there are some wonderful Muslims in this world. Like, but they do have, you know, I think there was a study one time that said like 5% of them can be extreme or lean towards extremism. And you're like, 5% of like 1 billion people.
Right.
Is,
there's so
yeah,
many.
That's quite a lot.
Yeah, that was one thing too, I think. And people get you talk about that he's Arab by ethnic, mm-hmm. right? Muslim by religion.
That's right.
And people get these convoluted sometimes when the attacks, and we had never talked about this off air, but when the attacks in Russia from ISIS, and people said, there's no way they're Muslims, look at them. And I said, do you not look at the Balkans?
That's right.
I mean, this idea that they look a certain way to
Southeast Asia. Indonesia is the largest Muslim country in the world.
Right. People get an idea that one equals the other.
I mean, some of the most incredible people in the world are in Southeast Asia and are Muslim, and they're like wonderful people. And they just great people.
But then some people from the Caucasus.
Yeah,
you know, are not. And some people there are great people, I'm sure.
That's right. Yeah, there's everybody's got their bad apples, except for Mobile. We're all 100% square here.
Good, good. Yeah, I'm not dragging you into any Mobile politics right now.
You know, it's so funny. I don't pay attention to it. I appreciate Sandy's doing his best and all that type of stuff. I trust that he hopefully is. I don't know. I think we paid too much in sales tax, but you know, hey, whatever. It's fine.
By the way,
that's all I know about.
They're raising internet sales tax. Again, they're trying in Montgomery, but we'll come back to that later.
Montgomery, those skilled guys up there. So
right.
Hey, as long as we are number one in football, I don't care, right?
See, there you are. This is our voter. This is the problem. No.
It's sarcasm.
Yes,
so.
I think this audience gets it as well. We're going to come back. I do want to talk about a subject that you may say, these guys always talk about this when they're together, but y'all know that Venezuela wants to take over a portion of a neighboring country called French Guiana.
Yeah.
Like, they pretty much said they want to do it. They want to do it nicely, but they want to take over. Jonathan and I will talk about this when we return. If you didn't know this was going on, you will after this.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 12:52, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. On this Friday, I could talk to this man for another 6 hours, but I know he's got places to go and teams to check on half a world away. Although you've talked about it before, because your clock, you got to get up real early. Your day starts.
Yeah, it starts usually in the office by 4. I'm actually headed to the beach today because I'm supposed to run the Mullet Man Triathlon tomorrow. I don't know if you've seen me, Sean, but
yeah.
I'm more of kind of like a pear as opposed to banana. But
I don't know. You've
a
been
a fat kid. But
you're slimmed down.
I've lost 30 pounds since the last time I was in here, but that was I went on a hazing exercise. But yeah, my pastor saw me last fall and was like, my former pastor, he's like, Jonathan, you're fat. And I was like, good to see you too, buddy. And he's like, let's do something about that.
That's so, a good pastor.
No,
say,
no, it's great.
Tell you what you don't want to hear.
And you're going straight to hell. I know that. Come on, dude.
Yeah, which one's where? Am I going to be fat in hell or am I going to be skinny in hell? Which
fat and happy, I tell you what.
So, good. Go down there. Enjoy that. What is that you're going to – is it triathlon or marathon?
A sprint tri. So it's like a 500-meter swim, 18-mile bike ride, and then a 5K to absolutely sweat it out on.
Okay. I hadn't even talked about this yet, but I was listening to something the other day that they were going to try to cancel some of the swimming events for the Olympics in Paris because the Seine is so dirty.
Oh, is it? Oh, okay.
The people can't get in there without getting E. coli infections and all that stuff. So.
You know, I had E. coli 2 weeks ago. Got it in South Africa.
That's how you lost all that weight.
That was 7 pounds for sure. I'll take it. Hey, give me malaria next. I'm going to drop another 20.
This is the way you do it. International traveler and weight loss. All right. Speaking of international travel, in place you could probably get malaria, that would be French Guiana.
Oh, sign me up. Good oil.
So, this is something you and I talked about last time, but just to update, if y'all hadn't followed this, Venezuela, which now we've lifted sanctions on the oil again, so you know, has pretty much in a nice way told French Guiana they're going to seize some of their land or like 2/3 of the country.
That's right. Yeah, it's like 40% of their land because it's the proven oil reserves there are larger than Saudi's is what they're saying. I mean, which is, you know, well, I believe that when I see it. But
right.
But I mean, it's an incredible find. I mean,
but this is in our backyard, y'all. Think about the attention we're paying half a world away. This is in our hemisphere, y'all. This is, you know, Monroe Doctrine country.
That's right. It is. Let me just say this. Our attention's going there. Our attention's in the Middle East. Our intention is in Ukraine. Our attention should be with China. Like, that is our biggest threat to us right now in this country. And whether they take Taiwan, I know most people that are working in the government side know that, but they are the ones who attack our critical infrastructure.
Why don't you look
at
the funding things that came out, even with Johnson splitting the bills, you know, you've got big block of money for Ukraine, big block of money for Israel. The smallest portion of the funding was for Pacific.
Yeah. Yeah. And I will say, I mean, President Obama was actually pretty smart on like saying, hey, we're going to focus our efforts towards Asia and putting our military, you know, being ready for China, which was very great foresight there. Execution, but whatever, you know, like, right. Like, I mean, that's a big deal. Sorry to get us away from Venezuela, but I would feel remiss if I didn't say
that. Yeah. Okay. So you're looking to the Pacific, but are you looking at all to what it would mean if Venezuela rolls tanks into, you know,
to the jungle?
Yeah.
Tanks don't work in the jungle. Remember, we talked about that. Yeah. Well, that happened in Vietnam. We learned that.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, history sometimes works.
Yeah.
You know, could it happen? Absolutely. You know, are we aligning our...
And we're aligned with Guiana.
We're aligned with Guiana. And so, I mean, there's a positive side to that. You know...
And the rest of the Legion of Doom is aligned with Venezuela.
That's right.
Right. So, Russians, Cuba.
Can we come up with a cool name instead of Legion of Doom?
Yeah, I don't know. Just come back to Super Friends stuff. but they're aligned with Venezuela. I mean, this is something that is not popped off right now completely, but this is right here in our backyard.
It is. It is. Yeah. And I mean, it's scary. As we were talking offline, off air a few minutes ago, I mean, I've had a friend of mine for the last 10 years. It's like, we should totally... Guyana should be a huge ally of ours because of their oil reserves, which they've known about for years, and now they're proven oil reserves of being larger than Saudi.
So it's there. It seems like if we wanted to exert influence in other areas of the world, it should be French Guiana.
That's right. Yeah. Well, and I will say this: I mean, the U.S. does a great job of influencing the foreign countries. I mean, like in a positive way, especially economically. The problem is that we don't do. I mean, I think the Belt and Road Initiative that the Chinese did was absolutely phenomenal because they coupled their investment with long-term debt, and then they had clawback features to it. So, like, there's a road they built in Sri Lanka from Gaul to Colombo to Gaul, and it took a 7-hour drive to make it like a 45-minute to an hour drive, and so that's how efficient, because they just didn't have good roads.
Right.
So they built this like 6-lane or 4-lane highway, and everybody's like, what? And they put a toll on it. Do you know who's in that toll booth? A Chinese guy, because they collect the toll that pays for that road. And I'm like, absolutely phenomenal. And China's really done that. And they've invested all over Asia. They've invested in Africa. But what they do is they've invested, and they don't do what the U.S. does, which we give billions of dollars. We give billions of dollars.
Yeah.
They invest, and they're like, no, but you're paying back.
Right. I mean, and this is something that Trump had said the other day. Now, here's the thing about it, and we're about out, completely out of time, but the Lend-Lease program we've done, Lend-Lease only works when the person you're lending to is successful.
That's right. Yeah.
So if you Lend-Lease Ukraine and you don't believe Ukraine can win—
Then you're going to get stuck doing
where
it. Hey, the Lend-Lease worked out great. At least we got to keep the Panama.
That didn't work either. Jonathan, it's always a pleasure, man. Thank you.
See you, brother.
All right, coming right back, hour number two of Midday Mobile.